Wretched will be the young whose vigorous frames can sustain many tortures. Wretched the more advanced in years whose age is incapable of bearing such calamities. Is a man to see his wife led off to violence, to hear the voice of a child crying, "Father," when his own hands are bound? No. While those hands are free and grasp the sword, let them render an honorable service. Unenslaved by the enemy, let us quit this life together. This our laws enjoin. This our wives and children beg of us. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 102. Masada. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. High atop a mountain in the Judean desert sits Masada, one of the most famous archaeological sites in Israel. Every day, enormous crowds climb to its summit to commune with the warriors who once fought there, the warriors who died there. Masada's legend and story is famous around the world, and yet, perhaps the most interesting aspects of its story is not as well known, an aspect that bears with it the very essence of Jewish immortality. Today, I expand on my discussion of Masada in my Case for God series, drawing on Guy McLean Rogers' book on the rebellion, and Jody Magnus's book on the excavation of Masada, making the case that what occurred on that mountain is related to the eternity of Judaism and Jewish law, as well as to another mountain, one which stood at the heart of Jerusalem. Masada, a word for fortress, first came into being in the 30s BCE, when the paranoid but brilliant builder King Herod, fearing revolt, converted a clifftop garrison into fortifications fit for a king, with walls surrounding an enormous palace complex and stores of food and weaponry. A century later, when the Jewish rebellion began, a group of fierce and fractious Jewish fighters, called by Josephus the Sicari, or Dagger, captured the fortress for themselves in the year 66 CE. The leaders associated with the Sicari were Menachem, who you will recall was himself killed in Jerusalem because of his penchant for killing other Jews, and Eliezer ben Yair, who led the rebel Sicari in Masada until its fall. When Jerusalem was destroyed in 70 CE, the Jews on Masada remain some of the last Jews in rebellion in the Holy Land. They hold up within Masada's walls, hoping against hope that help would arrive from Babylonian Jewry. They hoped in vain. Instead, in 73 CE, Rome's 10th Legion, which had previously destroyed the temple, arrived at the foot of Masada. The Romans immediately built a massive wall completely surrounding the mountain, 10 to 12 feet tall and over 2 miles long, preventing any escape and blocking any Jews from coming to relieve them. The Romans then proceeded to build an enormous assault ramp, utilizing nothing but trees and dirt to ascend the western cliff of the mountain. To this day, that ramp remains a brilliant feat of engineering. Still the easiest route up the mountain, large enough to be seen from the air, it remains an eternal testament to how hell-bent the Romans were to destroy one small, stubborn band of Jews. The Romans made their way up the ramp with siege towers and battering rams. They succeeded in knocking down Herod's stone fortifications, only to discover that the defenders of Masada had built another wall behind it entirely of earth, which was impervious to the Roman assault. This the Romans lit on fire. For one extraordinary moment, the wind caused the furious flames to turn toward the Romans, threatening to devour them, and then signifying to Masada's defenders that God seemed to have, as it were, changed his mind, the flames began to devour the wall. Capture was imminent. As McLean Rogers writes, Eliezer must have recognized the significance of the second wall's destruction. Quote, "Flight was impossible. There were no more means of mortal deliverance, and no more brave deeds could save his people. At most, he had some 300 fighting men under his command, calculating that at least half the people on Masada were women and children, and that some of the men on the Mesa would have been too old, too young, or too ill to fight effectively. We know that the inhabitants of Masada did make weapons for themselves, and some may have been combat veterans, but there is no evidence that they had any sort of military organization. The residents of Masada in 73 or 74 were mostly civilians who were there to get away from the Romans, not to fight them. Eliezer also would have known what the Romans would do to their women and children if, when, the Romans were victorious the next day." End quote. It is in the history of Josephus that we find an account of what happened next. Eliezer ben Yair addressed his followers. According to Josephus, his first speech focused on the rebels' own failings, seeing in the Roman conquest a sign of the judgment of God. Referring to the Almighty, Eliezer is supposed to have said, quote, "See now how he exposes the vanity of our expectations by visiting us with such dire distress as exceeds all we could anticipate. For not even the impregnable nature of this fortress has availed us salvation. No, though ample provisions are ours, piles of arms and an abundance of every other thing needed, yet we have been deprived, manifestly by God himself, of all hope of salvation. For it was not of their own accord that those flames which are driving against the enemy turned back upon the wall constructed by us. No, All this shows anger at the many wrongs which we madly dare to inflict upon our countrymen. Let us not pay to our bitterest foes, the Romans, the penalty for those crimes, but to God, by the act of our own hands. It will be more tolerable than the other. Let our wives die not dishonored, our children unacquainted with slavery, and, when they are gone, let us give a generous service to each other, preserving our freedom as a noble winding sheet. But first let us destroy our money and the fortress by fire, for the Romans, I know clearly, will be grieved to lose at once our bodies and the profits. Let us spare only our provisions, for they will testify when we are dead that it was not want which defeated us, but that, in keeping with our initial resolve, we chose death over slavery." End quote. Again, our knowledge of the speech is only from Josephus, but if there is accuracy to it, it is very striking in its outlook. The Sicarii, like other rebel groups, did indeed inflict terrible violence against fellow Jews, and Eliezer, according to the speech, supposedly saw divine punishment for that in what was occurring to them. Bearing this in mind, we can note the haunting fact that according to Josephus, Masada fell on the 15th of Nisan, the date of the Passover Seder, the day of the original Israelite freedom. And as we have seen, it was in the Passover celebration in the temple of 70 CE that Jews made manifest the fact that they were as interested in fighting each other as they were in battling the Romans, and that it was around this time that Titus's siege began in Jerusalem. Suddenly, several years after 70 CE, it is around Passover that the last standing rebels against the Romans died. This, however, according to Josephus, was only the first speech Eliezer gave. A second, longer one followed. And again, this is only from Josephus, and as McLean Rogers notes, it is hard to understand how Josephus could have gotten a fully accurate record of the words of such a lengthy speech. But the words are themselves striking, and it is worth citing a portion of it. Eliezer is supposed to have focused in this speech on the destruction of Jerusalem and what that meant to those on Masada. Referring to that destruction of the most sacred city, Eliezer supposedly said, quote, "Who such a foe to his fatherland, so unmanly, so fond of life, as not to regret that he is still alive today? No, I wish we had all been dead long before we saw that holy city razed by an enemy's hands, that sacred sanctuary so profanely uprooted, not seeing that we have been beguiled by a not ignoble hope that we might by chance find means of avenging her of her foes, and now that hope has vanished and left us alone in our distress. Let us hasten to die honorably. Let us have pity on ourselves, our children, and our wives, while it is still in our power to find pity from ourselves. For we were born for death, we and those we have begotten, and this even the fortunate cannot escape. But outrage and servitude and the sight of our wives being led to shame with their children, these are no necessary evils imposed by nature on humanity, but befall through their own cowardice those who, having the chance of forestalling them by death, refuse to take it. But we, priding ourselves in our courage, revolted from the Romans, and now at the last, when they offered us our lives, we refuse the offer. Who then can fail to foresee their wrath if they take us alive? Wretched will be the young whose vigorous frames can sustain many tortures. Wretched the more advanced in years whose age is incapable of bearing such calamities. Is a man to see his wife led off to violence, to hear the voice of a child crying, father, when his own hands are bound? No. While those hands are free and grasp the sword, let them render an honorable service. Unenslaved by the enemy, let us quit this life together. This our laws enjoin, this our wives and children beg of us. The need for this is of God's sending. The reverse of this is the Romans' desire, and their fear is lest a single one of us should die before capture. Haste we then to leave them, instead of their hope for enjoyment at securing us, amazement at our death, and admiration of our courage." End quote. According to Josephus, they all drew lots and chose 10 men to slay the rest. The remaining 10 then chose one to slay the survivors, who then in turn set fire to the storehouse and ran his blade through himself. And yet, from the excavations of Masada, we learn less about how the Jews of Masada died than how they lived. Since the excavations of Masada in the 1960s, what has been revealed is how the besieged Jews observed Jewish law in the most dire of times. Jody Magnus describes in her book how we can tell that in a time of siege and war, the Jews maintained a synagogue at Masada, as well as a geniza, a storage place for pieces of sacred scripture, scripture that had been used for public readings and study sessions. The makeup of the vessels testified to a profound knowledge of the laws of kosher and ritual purity. And most interesting of all were the mikvehs, or ritual baths. Magnus cites Yigal Yadin's account of the arrival of two rabbis who eagerly made their way to the summit to see the mikveh. Quote, "One hot day, during the hotter hours of the afternoon, the two rabbis arrived on the summit. They had climbed the tough snake path on the east face, under the broiling sun, wearing their characteristic heavy garments and accompanied by a group of their Hasidic followers. Though they are no longer young, neither of them agreed to rest when they reached the top, nor did they wish to see any of the handsome structures of King Herod, They wanted one thing only, to be led directly to the mikveh. We took them there, and the aged Rabbi Mutzberg immediately went into one of the pools. When he completed his meticulous study, he announced with beaming face, and to the delight of all, that this mikveh was indeed a ritual bath. End quote. Masada is identified with Jewish death, but as striking about it is its testament to the continuity of Jewish ritual life. The methods used to create mikvahs on Masada were the same as those used in, say, Manhattan today, the same 2,000 years ago as today. The Torah, the ritual law observed on Masada, continues today, and it is the Torah that allowed the Jewish people to endure. It is Jewish ritual life that allowed Jews throughout the centuries to delight in life and to sanctify life. And it was Jewish ritual life that continued to remind them of the temple and Jerusalem so that Jews could return to Jerusalem in our age. The Romans could scarcely have imagined that the ramp they created to assault Masada would one day be used as a path for tourists in an independent Jewish state, and that the fortress they conquered would one day be used to swear in Israeli troops that would promise that Masada will not fall again. They certainly could not have predicted that bar mitzvahs and prayer services would take place on Masada, involving the observance of similar rites that the defenders of Masada marked, even as today the glory of all that was Vespasian's empire is an archaeological curiosity. No other faith, no other people has a story of miraculous resurrection like Judaism and the Jews. The word mikveh, as the rabbis noted, also appears in the Bible in a form that means hope. God, we are told in sacred scripture, is mikveh Yisrael, the hope of Israel, and the mikvahs on Masada remind us of an eternal people with an eternal law who never lost hope. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.